This update was brought to you by Web Chevy. Searching for a great deal on Chevys in Chicago? Visit Web Chevy in Plainfield or Oak Lawn. Fantasy football commissioners, host your fantasy draft party in a private suite at iconic Soldier Field on August 18th. Complimentary food and beverages are included, along with a panel discussion featuring Connor McKnight, Nick Shapkowski, Julie DeCaro, and myself. Visit chicagotribune.com/draftparty to get your tickets now. I'm Joe Ostrowski, and you're listening to the radio home for Cubs baseball, 670 The Score. The next game on The Score is tomorrow when the Cubs take on the Brewers. This is 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
This hour is brought to you by Riverfront Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in the North Aurora Auto Mall.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
2-2 on David Bodie, trying to come through. And the pitch on the way. Bodie drives one in the air. Deep center field. Back goes Taylor. It's got a chance. It's a grand slam. A grand slam for David Bodie. And the Cubs have won the ball game. Can you believe it?
Wow. Yeah, our pitching was outstanding, too. Great ball game. And then it's finished off by David Bodie. He did not use Rebel when he walked up to the plate. I was slightly disappointed. But otherwise, it was... just a really classic performance, the kind of game we played against these guys a lot.
Middays on The Score.
Pretty special night at Wrigley Field, and everybody who's played there has heard that place explode for one reason or another. But that's one of those memorable moments off the bat of David Bodie on national television. Joining us now, a couple of former Cubs who are here to play some golf for a good cause. Gary Matthews and Pete Lecoq joining us on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. What's happening, guys?
Yes,
good. Good time.
Yeah.
It's L-A-C-O-C-K.
I didn't write this down. I knew that. And you know why I knew it? Because in 1976, every time I opened a pack of Topps baseball cards, there was a Pete Lecoq in there. Whether I wanted it or not, somewhere in my parents' house, somewhere in the crawl space, there is a shoebox of like 15, all the Cubs and just this surfeit of Pete Lecoq cards. They make more of them that year or something?
I don't know. Did they even have a Pete Lecoq hot dog at Wrigley Field?
Well, they do now?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
What's on it?
Oh, I don't even want to. I'll show you a picture of it later on. But it's pretty disgusting.
That's some endorsement. So where does that rank in Cubs moments that you either were spectated or were a part of, Sarge? That was it was fun, wasn't it?
Well, anytime you're able to come back in that fashion, you can't beat it. Bases loaded, you're down by three. That's kind of like what players dream about. The only thing they'd like to do is to do that in the World Series. But to keep the momentum coming up, and more importantly, to win and then have an off day, it just gives you a lot more momentum going into your next game, as opposed to thinking about the loss and how you lost it. It was just so dramatic, and obviously those left field fans always do their job.
What does it mean to go back and forth on the momentum pendulum like this, Sarge? Like, Dan and I talk about this. We've never been in a clubhouse, you know, day in, day out kind of thing. But you know, the Cubs seize, I guess, what would be some good feeling or whatever on Friday. They get blown out on Saturday. And they come back and do what they did, you know, yesterday. To ride that back and forth, to feel like you've got it and then have it thrown away by a bad start by somebody and then get it back, that's got to play with you a little bit.
Well, they have some guys that can hit. And more importantly, it's hard to measure how much Joe means for these guys, because he goes through the ups and downs with them, but he gives them the benefit of the doubt. And a real great example is with your right fielder and sometimes center fielder, Hayward, where he has given him so much confidence that look at the year that he's having now. And you don't do that without a manager showing confidence in you and letting you know that you can do it and trying to put you in the best situation. Yeah. And Joe really has a canny way of doing that. And when you do that, players will go through the brick wall for you. But then, more importantly, he has guys on that team that really does give you solid at-bats from every single time they go up. Every plate appearance they go, it's a tough at bat, and it makes it very difficult for the opposition.
Now, here's an interesting note when you talk about a player taking advantage of a situation, and what a moment like that, when he hit a golden home run, that only two other times in baseball history, of course, since we have the pitch data, has somebody hit a walk-off grand slam down to the last strike to win a game having been down three. Chris Hoyles did it, and Alan Trammell did it, and David Bodie's the third to do it. What a special Grand Slam. How about this? Pete LeCocq, in 1975, hit the only Grand Slam of his career in the final appearance by Cardinals ace and all-time great Bob Gibson.
I just want to remind you, it was Bob Gibson Day.
Was it really?
Yeah, he came in relief. It was 6-6 tie. Bases loaded, nobody out. Pop up, strikeout. I came in there. And we had had a fighting score all the time. He'd hit me a lot. I started out, I was 19 years old. I walked him off at Wrigley Field. And I don't think he ever forgot it. He'll never forget me, that's for sure.
What'd you get from him? You hit a fastball?
Oh, it was a fastball. Yeah. 3-2 count. It's right there.
So that kind of thing, does it stay vivid in your memory, or does it change? Does it get that sepia tone over the years? Does it maybe go from 402 to 460? How does it change?
You know, I hit it, I knew it was gone, and that's when they had AstroTurf, and it hit the mezzanine and was rolling back, and Ted Sizemore got the ball, threw it back to Gibson, and he was following me around the bases, calling me everything After I got to home plate, I was almost walking. I was going to the dugout. He got the ball and threw it at me right over my shoulder. So, yeah, he has issues.
Sarge, we talked to David Bodie last week. We're going to talk to him again in just a few minutes. But talk to him last week about his approach. And from your experience as a hitting coach, you see these guys sometimes just find something that clicks. So his exit velocities have been up. He talked about where his contact point is, where he wants to meet the baseball, and he's changed that, and he's worked on it so much now, as we see in these young hitters, is understanding that everybody's throwing 100 miles an hour. It's all about velocity, covering some of the off-speed pitches. What advice would you have for a young hitter trying to figure out in this latest version of MLB, where do you want to find the baseball? What do you think about launch angle and everything?
Well, I mean, first of all, with the launch angle, you don't launch balls that are, say, high. The balls that you're able to launch are like the belt and maybe balls that are down. Willie McCovey used to always kill the ball and so on that was a down. For me, for younger players to be a real good player, you got to know the strike zone. And the more strikes you swing at, the better off you're going to be. If you can develop where you do have a good strike zone, Tony Gwynn, for instance.
Well, that's pretty swinging special.
Just saying, to know the strike. Bill Buckner is another one, knowing the strike zone. Bill Madlock, another guy, knowing the strike zone. And when you do, and you know your own strike zone, and you be within yourself, Altuve, knowing the strike zone, he takes no prisoners, and every fastball he seems to swing at, he's almost just right on it. Well, he's so short and compact, he knows where his strike zone is, and consequently, he's able to swing at a lot of strikes, and you don't lead the league four times in hits and not be a good hitter and not know the strike zone.
Interesting you put it that way. I was thinking about this in reference to Javi Baez, because even though Javi swings at almost literally everything, his first pitch swing rate, the number of times he's swinging at the first pitch he sees in at bat, has gone up exponentially. He's almost swinging at half of them he sees. And I wonder, you know, if you guys kind of felt that as you were playing, knowing that that first pitch was going to be something in the strike zone, or that's something that you could control the tempo of the at bat on, perhaps. He's had so much more success in doing this and swinging at first pitch strikes that he's got himself in an MVP conversation, despite the fact that he may not have the batting eye that Jose Altuve has.
Well, I think that, when we were playing, the pitchers threw a lot more first-pitch fastballs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's changed a lot now. They're showing change-ups, curveballs. You know, they're trying to deceive you in any way that they can. And they're trying to make you think, oh, what's he going to throw? Because, you know, whatever you say, you talk to any hitter, they do guess. I guessed. But I looked for a lot of fastballs. And, you know, just, again, it depends on the pitching, on the pitcher.
Well, personally for me, I had a good teacher in Willie Mays, and one of our our thing was, whatever you do, you don't take that first pitch fastball. But in my head, I would go up as if it was 2-0. So then I'm looking fastball, and if it's a breaking ball, I have the discipline to be able to lay off of it or off speed pitch. So you want to be able to get into hitting counts 2-0, 3-1. 2-1, so you can almost dictate the pitch that you want. And the reputation that we used to have with the Giants is that, hey, whatever you do, don't throw Mays a first pitch fastball. And that's why they would wrinkle the ball. Or if you did, it better be in a doggone good spot, because they were looking at him. And that's the way we were taught from Hank Sauer, our hitting coach, to be able to hit that first pitch fastball. And our motto was, in the hitting counts, don't be late.
Where are we on the bat flip? Where, I mean, I know the game is changing, I think, for the better. I admit that I've come around on some of this stuff to appreciate some of the joie de vivre with which some of the young players play. Honest feeling, gut response when you see that.
Well, it was a beautiful bat flip. There, it really was. It was a beautiful bat flip. Now, if they retaliate, they retaliate. It was worth the flip.
Sarge?
I think nothing wrong with it.
Okay.
Remember, Dennis Eckersley that would give him a punch when he struck him out? You know, it's plain and simple. You don't want him to do that, don't let him hit the ball.
You know, this is going to be a gathering of old-time baseball guys here, and it does my heart good to hear you guys saying that. And experience also, I think, I don't know if you played winter ball in a Latin American country around here, and I know you played in Japan. Just the fact that the influence of other cultures on baseball has been a good thing in a lot of regards. Do you agree?
Well, I played 6 years of winter baseball, and you know, it helped me tremendously. And the guys that, when we were playing in winter ball, a lot of big league guys were down there. You don't see as many big league guys down there now, but you know, I have a lot of respect for the Latin players. They really play hard.
Love it. Without a doubt, I don't think I could have played the way I did without playing in Dominican. I played in the Capitol, where most of our guys were the Giants. On my team, I had one of the best hitters really in the game, Cecil Cooper. Oh. I was hitting third, he was hitting fourth, and I got to tell you, that year we really wore some Dominicans out. Again, those guys from Andujar and facing J.R. Richard, where you barely can see the ball.
Yeah.
But it's simple. In those countries, you don't play well, you don't hit, you go home. So the incentive to go there and want to excel, where I thought it was an honor to go to be able to play there, and most guys these days, they think it's punishment.
You mentioned Cecil Cooper. People forget that the year that George Brett flirted with 400,
yep.
I think it was 1985.
It was 1980. I was on the team.
It was 80. You're right. It was.
I was playing on the team,
and he ended up at 390. I want to say, and Cecil Cooper hit like 350. And people don't remember what a spectacular year he had just because he was overshadowed by Brett that year.
Well, you know, George, you know, besides being a great hitter, is one of those years that it seemed like every ground ball found a hole. You know, you got to be lucky too. But he makes a lot of good solid contact, and you know, Charlie Lau was my instructor, and you know, I was with him, and he was awful good. But he really taught George how to really hit well.
Well, it was a classic Charlie Lau disciple, too, with the one-hand high finish, the waggle and the swing. I mean, people, White Sox fans remember watching Greg Walker hit, and even, you know, Carlton Fisk, Ozzie Guillen tried, whatever. No two swings were alike.
He used a bat.
Yes, he tried, but that was, and even, you know, Walt Reniac with Frank Thomas adopted some of those same teachings. It's fun to watch out, because now very few guys hit like that.
Well, the one, I mean, you know what it is for me, again, everybody can't do that. So you find whatever works for you. Work for, you know, George Brett. I'm a true believer in, and especially as a hitting coach, you don't want to really change guys. What you want to do is look at them, analyze their swing, and then give them, you know, some work to be able to get better. And the way that they were listening to you, it's simple. They have to get results on that particular level in order for other guys to be able to look at you and emulate your swing and to be able to learn, for sure.
How's the golf game for each of you?
Well, I mean, it's getting better. I had double knee surgery, so this is the third time that I've actually
replacements?
Played. Oh, my God. Yeah, two of them.
And at the same time?
At the same time?
Oh, yeah. And I got proof, because when you go through that airport, it rings like it's Christmas time. I mean, they just automatically, when I go through, I just throw my hands up. So they give you a card, yep. So you could give, you know, to the TSA people. They told me to put it up. That don't mean anything. So they go in and swan you up and so on. But it's not a big deal. But I did have the surgery. I feel much, much better. Bone on bone. I know Mike Deca had it done, and he's walking a lot better after all those years in football. But, you know, Let's face it, medicine is better these days.
All right, guys, hit them straight. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having us. Really appreciate it.
Gary Matthews and Pete LeCocq, both former Cubs, both here as part of the Joe Madden's third annual Try Not to Suck golf outing. Next up, last night's hero, David Bodie, is going to join us on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Mully and Hall, Chicago's sports morning show.
Brian Urlacher's speech and what it meant and how we delivered it, I felt like that was the best Brian Urlacher has ever been in terms of rising to the occasion. I know it wasn't on the field, and in those 19 minutes, I don't know that he was ever better.
Mully and Hall, mornings 5 to 9 a.m. on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago's. This week's look back at baseball history takes us to 1973, when Roberto Clemente becomes the first Latin-born player to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. The mandatory five-year waiting period was waived to honor the late Pirates outfielder, who died tragically in a plane crash that was carrying relief supplies to victims of the earthquake in Nicaragua. This moment in baseball history is brought to you by MLB brand Chicago Cubs Edition Frozen Waffles, Burritos, and Chimichangas, which can be found in the frozen food section at Tony's Fresh Market. Text BASEBALL to 811-811 today for your money-saving coupon.
Hi, I'm Ben Zobrist, the MVP for Chicago's World Championship Baseball team. I've teamed up with Westfield Ford because I know a winner when I see one.
Get $4,500 off MSRP on a brand new 2018 Focus. Or choose 0 for 60 plus $2,500 bonus cash.
Join me, Ben Zobrist, on another winning team. Westfield Ford on LaGrange Road in Countryside.
All offers plus tax title license and doc fees to qualified buyers on select models. Savings from MSRP based on $16.67 per thousand financed. All Ford rebates and incentives applied expires 8/31/18.
And now, an ad from Dad.
All right, save.